Hi everyone, and thanks for tuning into the UBS Global Research Pod Hub, a channel that shares insights from economists, strategists, and equity analysts on the pivotal questions and events shaping today's markets. My name is Paul Schneider, Head of Markets Focus at UBS Research, and I'm here with my colleague, Jason Napier, Head of European Banks Research. And in this episode, we're going to take a high-level look at AI and the financial space. Now, over the last year, artificial intelligence has moved from the periphery to the center of banking conversations. And while the market attention has often been dominated by short-term macro risks, AI is rapidly becoming the most important medium-term force shaping both how banks operate, compete, and serve their customers and clients. Beyond the headlines and the hype, the questions are harder to answer. Where will AI genuinely create value? What could the risks be? And how are banks prepared for the changes that this demands? And with this, I'm delighted to welcome Jason to the podcast. And perhaps a first question to set the context. You recently produced a new piece, the AI Times, for the banks team, tracking the impact of artificial intelligence on banks and their customers. Why has AI become the most important medium-term force for the sector, do you think?
Thanks, Paul, for having me on. Look, for a long time, we've believed that the medium-term prospects for banks are inextricably linked with evolution of technological capabilities. Long before generative AI was a thing, we believed that the way that digital self-service and distribution was evolving was going to be central to medium-term returns in the sector. And so we run three different research products that is designed to help our clients remain ahead of the curve on the issues as they pertain to tech. The first and the longest running of them is a thing called the Bank Tech Bulletin. In it, we profile the performance of the new banks in the UK, in particular, the fintech firms. Secondly, we have our AI Captain series. That's a thematic research work on how AI in particular is evolving and how we think it impacts the banks. And then thirdly, as you said, we recently launched the AI Times, which is really work that details how AI is operating in the sector and what banks are saying about it. And there's been a huge amount of change as far as how they're deploying the AI capabilities and what it is they're telling investors about it.
So therefore, you talked about the number of products we're offering, which clearly has grown. The debate's clearly evolving. And how do you see the conversation evolving with clients? Initially, it was all about banks, indeed any corporate, thinking about early experimentation and pilot programs. Now it's a much more a focus on measurable outcomes. How are you seeing the debate with clients and how are you seeing the debate with corporates grow?
It's a multifaceted and important question. I mean, the first point to make is that banks ought to be perfectly shaped to be significant users of and beneficiaries of the improving technological capabilities. And starting there, I think, is most important. So the first point to make is that banks aren't any more efficient than they were 10 years ago. If you look at cost bases to loans in 2025, the number was pretty much the same as it was in 2015. And so despite all of the conversations that you've been having with bank management teams over the last decade around simplification, around investment in process, in digital, in self-service, the cutting of branches, the reality is the cost base today is pretty much the same as it was relative to loans 10 years ago.
So no change.
And that makes no sense to us, and it makes no sense to a lot of people. And what we think is going on is that there are two forces. On the one hand, you have a reduction in physical distribution costs, but you have an explosion in central risk, compliance, finance, and regulatory costs that has offset that over time. Now, when we think about the outlook for the execution of those functions on a more digital basis, we think that there's a very sound argument that banks can become a lot more efficient.
Are we seeing any impact in terms of the customer experience, the ability to achieve or to chase new revenue opportunities? Is there any other ways in which the growth that you can see coming through from AI is now visible?
Not yet. There is very, very little evidence that we're seeing changes that are in any sense material. And in actual fact, one of the things that we want to be very clear on is that we think at the moment, in the aggregate sense, banks are spending more on AI than they're saving. The P&L at this stage, we think, is probably suffering as a consequence of AI implementation. And it's probable that executives believe that they can't not spend, given that the medium-term capabilities that they're seeking to have, you just don't want to be left behind. And as a consequence, the sort of table stakes, if you like, for AI implementation. A year ago, you could have spoken about, you know, how many licenses you have. This year, you're starting to talk about the P&L payoff and the product implementations that you have. But the banks that are telling you explicitly what the net addition to the P&L is are few and far between. And so in the very near term, you can't actually point to many examples of net gains from the banks. But we are starting to see a number of companies that are talking about absolute declines in group costs. And that's a change. And over time, we think the number of banks that may be able to deliver that will grow, provided that the AI implementations, which are always risky, they're a tech project, are successful in the medium term.
So I guess a question tangentially related to cost, is it a case that the bigger banks, it's easier for them to spend more heavily on AI and to therefore realize potential cost savings and potential efficiencies? Is that the case? In other words, scale really and size does help you? Or are there examples across the different scale and size of banks that we cover and we think about?
That's a really important question, because ultimately most conversations with investors around AI deployment in banks is, okay, I'm a believer that banks in aggregate get more efficient. How do I best invest in it? Do I look for the best AI implementers? Or do I look for the companies that have the most to gain? And I think the challenge there is it's quite hard to know who are the best AI implementers, right? It's simpler to deploy AI in smaller, newer tech companies, but arguably they have less to gain and smaller data pools and smaller customer franchises across which to deploy those capabilities. So I'm afraid the answer is both. Big banks with more data, more complexity, and higher cost income ratios have the most to gain. But it will be a while, we think, before you start to see very material gains from those firms. And so we do gravitate in our strategy work towards larger, more complex businesses with high cost income ratios as the ones who will benefit most in time.
In other words, they can both invest and they can see the returns on the other side.
Completely. So, they have the, you know, it's much harder to take a cost income ratio down from 35% than it is from 60. Yeah. Typically, the gap between 60 and 35 is substantially driven by business mix. Yeah. But the more capacity you have for efficiency improvements, obviously the bigger the prize.
Perhaps another way of thinking about this is the end consumer or the customer of on the banking side. Now, the customers that banks serve are many, including corporates, including individual consumers. As frictions fall and service quality potentially improves or likely improves, how do we think about customer loyalty as a factor? How do we think about the customer or the consumer's ability to consume a product? How do we think about AI's impact on that? Mm. Are there any barriers or any ways in which things both change or are unable to change?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Of course, it's one that we've had to evaluate again and again. AI is just the latest sort of iteration, if you like, of the question of, in a modern environment in which it's easier to switch, will we see more of it? Will we see more shopping around, and will margins ultimately decline? And Paul, what I got to say is that to date, in all of the major changes that we've had, for example, in the UK, the implementation of guaranteed switching in 2 weeks. You and I can walk into a bank today, sign a form, and within 2 weeks, we bank somewhere else on a riskless basis.
Yes.
And people are not doing it, right? The application of open banking in the UK and in a number of other markets around the world ought to allow you to with much less friction, manage your financial affairs. And yet in aggregate, we can see no evidence that it's causing margin decline.
Do you think generationally there are differences? If I think to myself, I'm someone that set up an account as a graduate and I've probably still been quite loyal to that institution.
Right.
Do generational shifts perhaps play a factor?
I think they do. I absolutely think they do. And thank you for not labeling me as old, although that's undoubtedly a practical reality. if you look at the skews as to where the economic profit is in banking, it's with older customers, right? Who've had the time to accumulate wealth. And at a certain stage of your life, it's about preservation rather than optimizing to the nearest 20, 30 or 40 basis points of fees or deposit uplift. And so for much of the market, life's just too busy and the payoff too small to want to optimize the size of your deposit base. It would cost more to sign up to the pro package of one of today's AI schemes than you'd make if you were optimizing your deposits every month all year long.
Which we could have always have sought to do regardless of AI.
If we could have done it with the Sunday Times, you know, 30 years ago, looking at the best time to buy tables. Absolutely right.
Maybe taking a step away from the consumer themselves, but perhaps thinking more esoterically about AI, there is obviously a concern or a question around trust and fraud. And that's something I know we've written about within the report. In what sense is trust a more critical factor for a financial institution in an AI-enabled world? How can and do you think will financial institutions combat that or think about it as it relates to customers, but also to regulatory risk?
Yeah, at a really high level, I want to be clear. The only moats that we think exist to banking are trust and customer inertia. The reality is that you could set up a bank very cost effectively today with bank-in-a-box technology and fairly rapid registration at the regulatory frontier. And so what stops you scaling isn't your capacity to write code. What stops you scaling is the cost of customer acquisitions in a market that's quite sticky, where people didn't get out of bed this morning thinking, what I need is another current account. Right. So if trust and customer inertia are the two barriers to entry, how do we see that evolving in an AI world? Trust, I think, gets profoundly more important. You know, if you think about the scams of last year or 5 years ago, it was an email filled with spelling errors offering you spurious financial gains to cooperate with somebody in a third country. We will be, if we're not already seeing in our own lives, very sophisticated fraud. And in that environment, my guess is, and it's impossible to prove, but my guess is that people's appetite for agentic deployment of their wealth, where I cede control to someone else, as being extremely limited. So from a trust perspective, I think it gets more important, not less. In a world where you literally cannot believe your eyes anymore, I think your capacity to deploy other people on your behalf in a financial sphere.
So in that sense, execution is critical. If you're sitting at a board level of the financial companies and banks around the world, the execution challenges are significant. The risks, the costs of implementation are also notable. Therefore, there is a way in which we can think success isn't going to be guaranteed for everyone. Will there be particular factors you think that will determine a company's success? You mentioned size and scale earlier, but are there others that our listeners need to think about?
I think so. Just finishing up on the sort of previous point. So if trust becomes more important, I do think inertia will decline. Your capacity to move will be quicker. Your capacity to self-serve, competitors' capacity to tell you where you might be getting a better deal somewhere else will naturally rise. And so inertia, I do think over time, will decline. And so those are sort of two competing forces that I think that we've got to sort of hold in our heads simultaneously. But in the near term, I think less will probably change than people think. What we will see is improving service for everyone. You know, the tools that are available to customers will improve over time.
Do the competitive barriers within the sector also come down? The barriers to entry?
I don't think they were material to begin with anyway. I think that the sort of fragmentation of wallets that you can see in the official data when you think about account openings is pretty well established.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that although the new competitors are growing really quickly, they've not yet reached sufficient scale to change industry margins or market shares to any great extent. Over time, they will become a force to be reckoned with. But at this stage, I don't think that this significantly changes the competitive intensity of the landscape.
One final question, if I may. To what extent in the conversations you're having with investors are they either underestimating or overestimating the capabilities, how AI is advancing and what we could see. And I say that both in the context of AI, but of course, we have a wider geopolitical world, geopolitical environment to consider. Mm-hmm. And clearly, the debate on AI runs very much tangential with that. How are investors thinking about things, do you think, at this juncture?
I mean, things are obviously extremely fluid. In February of this year, so before issues in the Middle East were sort of front and center, there was a really vibrant debate with investors around the potential net impacts of AI. In fact, there was one week in February when on Monday, the investor narrative was around deposit cost optimization. You know, this idea that you'd take your surplus funds and earn the best yield you could on an automated basis. By Wednesday, the fears were around wealth margins and fee revenues. And by Friday, there were concerns around white-collar unemployment. And so, in short, people don't really know what to think. AI is obviously front-page news most days. But what we are desperately short of are significant numbers of practical examples of the things that is currently being done in banking by AI that were previously done by humans. So we have a handful of examples that we think show us the way forward. One large European bank, for example, was able to convince the regulator that its AML screening was twice as accurate when done by AI than when done by humans. And as a consequence, it's turned that function in two of its markets over to AI. That feels like the pattern of what's to come. But the practical reality is that, you know, so far at least, the use cases tend to be around coding. And banks are reporting, you know, saying things like 30% of our coding is now done with the assistance of AI. But we've doubled the number of engineers we've got versus 3 years ago. And so at this stage, it feels like when the cost of something declines, you produce more of it. You're not necessarily in a situation where headcounts in group centers are starting to change, when tech complements are changing, finance complements, risk complements. And so one of the things we're really focused in our work on is trying to examine headcount deployment, cost base profiles, to look for evidence that in aggregate, banks are finding it possible to recycle one type of cost for another. Because one of the matters in AI that is far from settled is what the economic models of the AI providers are going to look like. How expensive will it be, particularly for some of the tasks that perhaps are not that expensive to execute in human terms? How expensive will it be to replace human capital with AI capital in the future? And so it's not yet clear, both to us and to the banks that we talk to, what range of tasks are best performed by AI, not just today, but as AI presumably becomes more capable in future.
Jason, you've been given a very, very comprehensive outlook for us there. Thank you very much for joining us. And I guess in conclusion, as I sit and listen to the conversation, for myself, the thing that stands out is AI can potentially be a silver lining for banks, but it will ultimately be not necessarily the case for all, and will certainly be considered a tool that will both potentially accentuate strengths, but also highlight weaknesses of various different financial organizations. It's also the case that lower friction won't automatically, based on what you've just said, translate in naturally into higher returns, and certainly not without potential cost in the near term. And as you also mentioned, fraud is potentially going to likely become more sophisticated, and that will enable the focus on trust and loyalty ever more so than it did in the past. Just a few thoughts as I was listening to Jason and his perspective. I'm sure that we're going to revisit this story again, in both AI as a broader topic, but in particular AI and how it's shaping banking, both here in Europe and around the world, not just technologically, but structurally and from an economic perspective. Thank you for visiting the UBS Global Research Pod Hub. This is an overview of AI and banking with myself, Paul Schneider, and my colleague, Jason Napier. If you've enjoyed this episode, please tune in again and share this episode with a friend or colleague. And we look forward to recording future podcasts very soon.
This content has been prepared by UBS AG its subsidiaries and or affiliates, and is purely informational in nature. It is not investment research and does not contain an investment recommendation, nor investment or professional advice. It is not an offer or solicitation to engage in any investment activity, and you should seek your own financial, tax and legal advice before engaging in any such activity. UBS has no responsibility to you in relation to this content and has no regard to your personal circumstances or investment objectives, and receiving it does not imply any form of client relationship with UBS for any legal, regulatory or tax purpose. This content is not intended for distribution into any jurisdiction where to do so would be contrary to law or regulation. UBS does not accept any liability over the content of such material or reliance upon any information contained herein. The views and opinions expressed by any guest speaker or third party are not those of UBS. Accordingly, UBS does not accept liability over any such views and opinions expressed by such persons. This content is the valuable intellectual property of UBS, and UBS specifically prohibits the redistribution of it in whole or in part without its prior written permission. Copyright UBS 2026. The key symbol and UBS are among the registered and unregistered trademarks of UBS. All rights reserved.